This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia. Listen to my radio show, A Tip from Gilbert. Talk, inspiration, and prayer every Monday from 11 a.m. till noon on Houston's gospel leader, KWWJ, 1360 a.m. and streaming live on KWWJ.org. Listen on the legendary KYOK, 1140 a.m. and streaming live on KYOKradio.org. KCOH, 1230 a.m., The Source. On Sand Geek Radio, 95.1 FM, 1460 a.m. And Aliento Radio, 101.7 FM and 1540 a.m. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then. All right, Houston, this is Gilbert Garcia with another episode of A Tip from Gilbert. And I got to tell you, well, thank you, studio audience. Thank you very much. And, you know, I'm very excited to sort of be back in the saddle. And I've already been excited to see all the things going on. And already we went from a mayor's election to all of a sudden we're like, it's like ready for the presidential election. And so it's amazing how that is. Well, I have two wonderful guests, and they are dear friends of mine, but more importantly, they are significant leaders in the community. And that is Mr. Claude Cummins, senior, and of course, Mr. Pastor Claude Cummins the third. So welcome.
Thank you.
We have so much to talk about. Before we do that, sometimes you just wake up and you say, boy, Lord, please help us. I mean, am I right?
You're right?
Houston, am I right? How many times do you wake up and you say, you know, I see what's going on in Gaza and Israel. I see what's going on in Ukraine and all these people that are just innocent.
Innocent, right.
And they're caught up in the politics of things. And then you see what's happening to these human beings trying to live a better life, and they're trying to come across the river into Texas. And so it's just one of those things where, you know, Lord, please, please remember us.
Yes.
So, Pastor, would you mind saying a prayer for us?
I will. I do not have a problem at all. Let us pray. Father in heaven, we come, God, saying thank you for this day. God, this is yet just another opportunity for us to lift up your name and give you some praise. And as Mr. Garcia alluded to, God, there are so many atrocities taking place over this on this earth, throughout the country, throughout the world. God, but we know that you still reign on the throne. We know that you are still sitting high looking down on us. God, we just ask that you would just continue to grace us with your mercy, and to bless us with your mercy and your grace. They are new each morning. God, be with all of us. Bless us according to our needs. Protect us. Give peace. Again, we're asking you, God, because we know that you are capable of doing all things. And so again, God, we say thank you in your son, Jesus Christ's name, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, there's a couple of things I had, and I kept a couple of newspapers because when you see a headline that says the city late fees to vendors are soaring. Houston, you know, we have all kinds of vendors, right? We have thousands and thousands. And of course, you know them, and you just got to process them accordingly. And it says here that Mayor Parker said, from 2010, and this is from the Chronicle, from their investigation, from 2010 to 2016, the city had late fees. They were $33,100, or around $5,500 a year. Well, over the last 8 years, we racked up over $1 million in late fees. Think about that for a moment. Let that sink in. You know you got the bill. You got to pay our vendors, especially those that are small businesses. You got cash. Why aren't we paying these bills on time to save on these $1 million worth of fees? It just doesn't make sense. And so I am hopeful that we'll get some sanity back into the city and get things working. But boy, already there's been some interesting changes. We'll go to that.
But first, Pastor, tell us about...
Before you go to that, though, Gilbert, how does that happen?
I've been trying to figure out. That's right.
You know, how... I mean, you've got to have individuals that have budgets, that are over departments. You know, since I've been elected to president of CWA, every Tuesday, I have a full day of meetings with my senior directors to go over things that need to be taken care of. And so my thoughts are, how in the world can the city the size of Houston be late on paying vendors?
The only answer I have is just goes back to a lot of things I said on the campaign trail. Remember, Houston, I ran for mayor. And thank you to all those who voted for me. And more importantly, thank you to everyone who voted at all, because we need to participate. It all really comes down to incompetence and poor leadership. I mean, it just does, because you have a department. It's essentially the exact same department that was there under the previous mayor. So they had the same procedures, the same people generally, the same number of vendors, but yet now we spent well over $1 million of late fees. It makes no sense. That's the only thing I can think of. It's just old-fashioned incompetence, because these are good people that work in the city. So it's really about the leadership. That's where it really starts, to really set a tone that these certain things are not going to be tolerated, because it is costly to all of us as taxpayers to not pay on time. Right. It makes no sense. So I'm going to quickly go, because I want to get this in, because my good friend, Pastor Cummins, is running for office. And first of all, I think in many ways, it's a natural for you.
Yes, it is.
I mean, really, when you think about it, and people may say, well, golly, what made you run, or what made you that? It really is a natural, because you've always cared about the community.
Sure.
And you've always wanted to do more in the community, and you've always cared. And so it's just a natural. So tell us again about what you're running for, and what does the tax assessor do? A lot of people do not know. No.
So again, thank you, Gilbert, for having me. I'm running for Harris County Tax Assessor Collector. And with the Tax Assessor's Office, they have three main duties. That is, number one, to collect the taxes. Number two, vehicle registrations. And then number three, voter registration. Those are the three main duties. However, the tax assessor, really what the tax assessor does is the CEO of the Tax Assessor's Office. And so there are 7-8 departments, 398 employees. And so what the tax assessor does is, I like to say, manage and implement. Manage that department, but then also implement some things to make it run more efficiently and effectively.
Super great. Well, do you have any, I mean, you now work for the county now, is that correct?
I do.
So what department do you work in?
I work for Harris County Community Supervision and Corrections Department.
So okay.
The adult probation.
So this would be a new thing for you.
It will be, yes.
Not and, for the county,
right.
But
yes. And yes. And
tell us.
I previously worked with Harris County Precinct 1 under Commissioner Ellis. And in that role, I implemented programs for seniors and for teenagers. And so really, Gilbert, it's the same, but just on a different level. It's about educating people and helping people and empowering them to do what's best for their lives. And so it's just a different level of doing that.
Is there any check and balance that the tax assessor has over the commissioner's court? Is there any sort of, they have to approve the monies or anything? I mean, I think there's something I heard recently,
sure,
that there's some type of check and balance that they have over commissioner's court.
Well, the commission, the tax assessor answers to the commissioner. So the commissioners oversee the budget of that office. And also the commissioners supply the tax rate to the tax assessor's office, who then determines, based on the appraisal that comes from the appraisal district, how much taxes each person is going to pay.
Very interesting. Tell everybody, and for those of you who are listening, we have it on the website, on all of our social media platforms. Tell us, what's your website and everything else, the phone number, people want to campaign, people want to donate money, et cetera.
Sure. So all that information can be obtained through the website, Claude claudefourharriscounty.com. Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E-F-O-U-R, harriscounty.com.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I'm going to talk about another topic, if I could, Claude, both Claudes, which is I saw recently that the county gave their toll road authority person a big raise, 40%.
40%.
Now, I know Roberto Trevino. He's a first-class person. Guy's awesome. And he used to work at Metro when I was chairman. And, of course, we lost him to the county. And, again, that's their game, but our loss at Metro. And then he's on the Metro board. But, boy, that seems pretty hefty to me. And what's interesting about that is they claim that the city was making him an offer.
Right.
We don't know that. But my gut is they wanted him to take over for Tom Lambert. That would be my gut. And I don't have any inside information, Houston, but that's just my gut because Tom Lambert ran Metro. He was fantastic. He was at the police chief. He was there for ultimately for over 40 years. And I believe his, and don't fact check me, or you can fact check, fact test me, excuse me, I had dental work done, but the bottom line is it was he's right around 360 or something, which is a lot of money, Houston, but boy, going into the 450, that's now, I mean, I don't think they thought it through because that's going to have implications for pensions. That's going to have implications for other people in that department that are going to say, well, golly, I want to go higher too. So it'll be very interesting to see how they manage it. But that's what I had heard. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know, Claude, if you heard anything different.
No, I hadn't heard anything different. It's obvious to me that they want to keep him.
Yep, that's right.
I mean, that's why they increased the amount of money. But I think to make that type of announcement or give someone that type of raise is questionable. I would have done it differently. I don't know why they just couldn't have promised him over the next 3 or 4 years incrementally.
Right.
They would have made raises, given him raises, which would have been, I think, fine with, certainly would have been fine with me. And and of course, the county judge, she actually was against it.
You know, yeah, she called it icky. It sounded icky. I haven't heard
but
that
I don't,
one.
Yeah, but I don't think it was icky. I mean, it's simple. Listen, they think that he's a good manager. They want to keep him.
That's right.
I mean, simple as that. And that's what you do. You pay people, you know, what you think that they are worth, and to keep them if they're doing a great job. I think where they made the mistake is to give him that type of raise right up front. What they should have done was just laid out a plan for him over the next 4 or 5 years to get to a point where he received that type of money. And I think it would have been fine, to be quite honest with you.
I think it would have been well, the answer is I agree with you. And it also, I think the way it came out, I guess but when you all I have to go by is the paper on how it came out and how the county judge felt like she wasn't part of that announcement, right, and so forth. But we'll just keep an eye on that, Houston, because
but that's the bigger question, Gilbert. You know, what's exactly going on over there? Because there have been a couple of instances where the county judge and the commissioners have been at odds with each other, you know, not only concerned, but just surprised.
Yep.
Let me say it that way. I mean, it just appears to me that they ought to be able to sit down and work out those kind of things. And the next thing is the county judge needs to be careful. If you're having discussions that are supposed to be confidential in nature, you know, those things need to be kept in a confidential type of way. You know, you don't want to give the impression that that there is turmoil that is taking place.
That's right.
In a county this large between the Democratic leaders, because the Democrats actually lead, you know, the commissioner's court now. So so if any of them are listening, you know, my plea is to please y'all get your act together and start operating with each other in a way to move things forward without all this confusion and stuff that's taking place.
And, you know, more than ever, we need each other.
Right.
More than ever. We already have a caller in. Let's see. Who do we have there?
Charlene Johnson.
Miss Charlene, are you there? Miss Charlene. Hang on, Houston. We're going to be connecting her. I think we lost her. That's a. Oh, no. Here she comes. Miss Charlene, are you there? Miss Charlene. All right. We'll come back to Miss Charlene. There's another thing I wanted to mention, Claude, is, you know, there was an article here that unless you really looked for it, you wouldn't find it. And it was on November 29th. Greyhound is leaving downtown Houston. And there's a little thing that says, and by the way, they've been there for years. Decades.
Yes.
Decades. Yes. Well, now they have switched into the East End. That's where they have moved the bus station. I have had more people call me saying, Gilbert, they just put the bus station in our neighborhood, in a neighborhood.
Mm.
And I don't know who did that. At the end of the day, I understand the concept of, you know, Greyhound needs to do what they need to do. They're free to do it. That's their building, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know, where are the elected officials to say, wait a minute, this is our community. Do we really want a bus depot and all that comes with that right here by my house and right here in the middle of the neighborhood? Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I did not know that, to be quite honest with you. That's that doesn't make any sense at all, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you would think that they want to keep it central downtown someplace, first of all, and I have no idea why they would want to move it into a neighborhood.
Well, but here's a very important part of this story. It said here, and I'm just reading from the Chronicle, you guys. Y'all always know Houston. I just read from what I see here. So they've been there since at least 1990, it says, which means we don't quite know, at least according to this reporter. Doug Begley, who I know, he's a very good reporter. During that time, however,
it's been there since the 70s.
I
actually took a bus from Houston to Tuskegee.
Okay.
Downtown Houston.
I was going to say, it's got to be more than the 90s.
Right.
Because when I moved here in 1990, it was there.
Yes.
So during that time, however, it sowed controversy as one of a handful of locations in the city with the most police responses. So in other words, they've had more police needs, one of the most in the whole city. And there have been some high profile crimes, according to this article right there. Well, here's the thing. If it was there with all the police attention of downtown, what do you think is going to happen in the neighborhood?
Right.
My goodness, we've got to be smart, Houston. Our leaders do. And that is, first of all, I'm going to invite some of the East End Alliance people to come on my show because they are up in arms, and I get it. I know I wouldn't want it in my neighborhood. Think about it. Would it ever be in River Oaks?
No.
So, but of course, the people of color, it's like, well, let's put it there. So let's go to our Charlene, because I'm going to have a lot more to say about this later on, Houston.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yes.
Charlene, are you there?
I'm here listening, yes.
How are you?
I am doing good, focusing on the campaign.
Yeah, tell us again, for everyone listening, what is the latest with your campaign, and where are you? And by the way, give us your website and everything else again.
Yes, so I am Charlene Ward Johnson, and I'm running to be the next state representative for District 139. And 139 consists of Oak Forest, which is at 16 and Shepherd, and it goes into Acres Home, Inwood Forest, Spring, all the way up to 1960. Up in that area on the east side.
Now, your family's been involved for a long time, right?
Yes, we've been involved in politics. Jarvis Johnson, who was my ex-husband, who was also endorsing me for the seat. When he was on city council, so I was involved in the city council. I was involved when he was running for state rep as well. So, yes, many years of being involved in a political process and bringing in resources and understanding community needs, all of that, and holding your elected officials accountable. Exactly.
Well, let me ask you this. By the way, someone just fact test us. That opened, according to someone that just hit us on the chat, 1977 is when that bus depot opened. 1977. So, Charlene, let me ask you this. What would be your platform going forward? Or do you intend to just sort of carry on? Or are there priorities that you have that are different?
Right. Well, I have years experience of bringing educational opportunities into the district, educational opportunities and also job opportunities for better paying jobs. When you have better paying jobs, you have better health care, you have, better housing, better can do things with your kids, and also affordable health care. Making trying to expand Medicaid to put a stop or a cap on the rising cost of prescription medicine. I mean, it just keeps going up and up. So those are my platforms, and that's what's going to be. And everybody knows that public education is right on the top with the vouchers and making sure our schools and the neighborhoods have adequate funding.
Can you imagine, Claude, and both and Pastor, that someone from out of Texas who is just against, for vouchers, decided to give the governor a $6 million contribution?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Can you believe that? And what's interesting about $6 million, that, first of all, is a lot of money. I mean, I don't even know if people have seen a $6 million check. At the end of the day, though, if he can easily write a $6 million check, that means he could easily give two or three times more.
That's exactly right.
I mean, that's really what that means, that he's got such liquid, net worth that he can do that. I just think that, you know, we've got to find a way, and this is not about the governor. I mean, he's just going by the rules. I get that. But at the end of the day, we really need to have some sort of campaign finance limits on these office holders, because it just becomes
you can buy a seat.
Yeah, it's too easy for someone to say, here's, and of course, you don't think he's going to get a phone call return like that?
Right.
Of course he is. Right. Well, Miss Charlene, tell us this. Do you have any events coming up? Any fundraisers?
No, not any fundraisers, just block walking. So if you want to block walk with me, I'm block walking every weekend. You can email info@electcharlene.com. info@electcharlene.com if you want to block walk with me. And I want to tell you, I am number 5 on the ballot. So remember, the election day is March 5th, and I'm number 5 on the ballot.
Woo, that's like 5-5. I get it.
Right.
Well, Miss Charlene, thank you so much for calling in.
Yes, thank you so much. And I used to ride that bus home when I first came to Houston to go to school at U of H from Temple, Texas. I used to ride the Greyhound bus.
Wow.
Home back and forth. So, yes.
What a great story.
With that bus, too. So, but all right, y'all have a good day. And thank you for allowing me to call in. Remember, Charlene Ward Johnson for 139, number 5 on the ballot.
Number 5. Right, like that song, Mambo, number 5. Thank you, Ms. Charlene.
All right, thank you.
So, Pastor, what's the latest with your church? Tell everybody about the church, because I remember when it got started. I have worshiped with y'all many times. It has to be one of the most incredible churches. I mean, it's just beautiful. And the way it's set up with these tall ceilings, and it's kind of circular. The acoustics are just, I mean, they got to be just fantastic. How are you feeling about it now?
Oh, feeling great. We were definitely blessed to have a beautiful facility. And not only that, but we take advantage by serving the community. And so, again, through our partnership with the Houston Food Bank, we feed nearly 600 families a month. And went to the Houston Food Bank meeting this past week and saw where they're now requiring their partners to distribute food at least 4 times out of the month. And so those numbers are going to double.
Wow.
They're going to double. But we're looking forward to it with the Victory International Church. We're located in zip code 77076. And I just like to mention that because the majority of the residents in that area are non-English speakers.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter to us. You know, who shows up for whatever reason they show up. We like to serve them.
And that's on Rittenhouse.
It's on Rittenhouse.
Yeah. What's the address again?
It's 170 Rittenhouse, 77076. And we have an English service on Sundays at 11 and a Spanish service at 4 o'clock on Sundays as well.
How wonderful. What's beautiful is to see you and your wife together because, you know, she's there and, you know, yeah. I mean, and she sings. She does. Does she sing?
She sings well.
Boy, I mean, you know, at the Garcia household, You know, there's no singing going on. Maybe my daughter does, but my wife, when she tries to sing, it's like, oh my goodness. Yeah. But let me ask you something else. What's interesting to what you said is that they're going to go to even more food giveaways.
Yes.
Is that because they see the need, or they just have so much excess groceries?
I think it may be a combination of both. They see the need. Don't let that food go to waste. Give it to the people.
That's
who
right.
need it. Yeah. Give it to the people who need it. Well, and so I think it's great because there's not a shortage. The line is never short whenever yeah. we are serving.
Well, that lets you know that I've been to before. And yeah. what's amazing, Claude, Big Claude, is you hear sometimes people say, oh, these people, they just don't want to work. Or, you, yeah, know, you hear this sort of meanness. And you know what? All you have to do is go to one of these food giveaways yeah. and to see people lined up sure. 3-4 hours early to get a turkey.
It's a need. Yeah. It's simple as that.
And then you know, people would not be doing that.
Right.
If they just like were just scamming. I mean, people need it. These are difficult times. It's taking 2 people, 3 people in a household to pay the bills.
Right.
Food yeah. is more expensive.
Yes, it is.
And I just think that there just needs to be a whole reevaluation of what are we doing with everybody working to the family unit. It's just, you know, we're kind of starting to lose some of that, which is why the church is so important to keep it together.
It is. And the church has always been a place where, you know, people could come to get a need met.
Yeah.
And at the Victory International Church, we are just glad to continue. You know, to continue to be that beacon light in the neighborhood where we meet the needs of the people. And so we're looking forward to expanding other services with our nonprofit. But for right now, I think we're doing an excellent job serving the community by providing them with food.
Fantastic. And just real quick, tell everybody, what are the days and time in case people want to go?
Yeah. So the next food distribution that we will have is going to be the 17th of February at 10 o'clock. And so once you come on the 17th, we'll get your information. Then we will make you aware of the times and days moving forward. We're going to have those food distributions. But the next one is on the 17th, 170 Rittenhouse, Victory International Church, 10 o'clock a.m.
I've got a personal question for you. Sure. Just 1 second. Sure. We have another caller. Who is our callers there? I saw the name, but I didn't quite see it. Miss Producer.
Hello.
Bob.
I'll try for you to give it 1 moment.
Let's go, Rob. Rob, you got me. Gilbert Garcia, what do you got? Bob, hit me.
Yeah. So I moved back.
I need a little bit of more volume, producer. Go ahead. Say that again, Bob.
No, I was going to say, I just moved back to Houston. I've been gone for 10 years. I come back and you used to be head of Metro. What happened to the Richmond West Park Metro rail line is my question. I know John Culberson was involved in that at one point. Just curious, come back 10 years, nothing's been done on that. Just
well,
wondering what happened there. And then one other comment, and I'll hang up and listen, is to your guest there who's running for office. Example here, what happened with me. I'm trying to register my vehicles here in Houston, Harris County. And I started the process in early December, and I still haven't been able to get my cards registered through the tax assessor here. I still have not heard back from them. So what happens there? Well, I can't get my driver's license, and I can't get my homestead exemption because they require a driver's license.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
so this is just polluting the waters, holding up everything down there. I'm not sure what's going on there. I know we had the holidays and all that stuff, but it's ridiculous. Appreciate the comment, the answers, and I'll hang up and listen.
What a great comment. And as someone who doesn't quite know, I take it for granted, sure. But if you cannot get your driver's license, then you cannot get lots of things.
It's a lot you can't do.
Wow.
And I'm hearing it's taking about 3 months to get a vehicle registered right now through the tax assessor's office. I don't know what the reason for that being, but trying to simplify all those processes is why I'm running for tax assessor.
Yeah, there's got to be a way,
because I hear it all the time. It's taking too long. I can't get answers, or where can I go get answers about protesting my taxes? Where can I go get answers about how to apply for homestead exemptions and all this? Under my leadership, if I am elected, it's going to take place at the tax assessor's office. There are so many easier processes and ways in which people can get information and then receive services that's not taking place. And listen, the people down there are working extremely hard, but for a couple of reasons, things are not moving as fast. First of all, it's the influx of the population, mm-hmm. right? Many of the services that they have were implemented in the early 2000s and some maybe in the late 1900s.
Oh, my goodness.
And so things just need to be updated. It was sufficient for that population then. But because of the growth, you know, things just need to be more modern, made more modern. And I really have a plan for making that office more efficient, for making the services more smoother. For people, because they don't have the time to wait.
That's right.
They need IDs so they can do other things. And it's just a shame that it's taken so long for those services to take place.
Well, you're already halfway there, because to be there, you got to recognize you have an issue.
Yes.
And if you don't even recognize that, well, then you're just doing the same thing over and over.
Yes.
So the mere fact that you recognize we got to do better, you're halfway there.
Yes.
Well, let me ask this. How many employees are there? Do you know what by
390, so close to 400.
In the tax assessor.
In the tax assessor's office. You know, there are also 14 locations throughout the county.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, 400 employees. It's a task, but it can be done. But the most important thing is to make the service more efficient,
mm-hmm.
Because people don't have time and they need their IDs. And, if you can't apply for your homestead, that means that your taxes are going to be late and it's going to be fees on top of that. And so it is, a detriment, to the citizens of Harris County when they mm-hmm. can't get the services that they need from the place where they're supposed to receive the services. So that's why I'm running.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a question. Why are you running? And what's your platform?
Well, first and foremost, I'm running to keep people in their homes. That's why I'm running. You know, I believe that if the tax assessor plays a role in people losing their homes, then the tax assessor should play an even bigger role in helping people keep their homes. And so that's why I'm running. I like to tell people, first and foremost, the job title is tax assessor collector. So I have to collect the taxes, mm-hmm. no doubt. But there's an education piece, you know, there's an education piece. How do I apply for my exemptions? Are there other mm-hmm. Tax exemptions that I can apply for? How do I protest my property taxes, which we should all do because they go up 10%?
That's right.
Anyway. And so there's an education piece to helping people understand there are things that you can do to protect your property, to protect your generational wealth, educating people and empowering them to be able to do that.
Very interesting. Does that mean that I'll start writing my checks out to you?
You know, when you
have to collect, you know, it'll say Claude comes as a third.
Yeah. And it just depends on who you are. You would see my face.
Have you ever noticed that? Everybody's
on the tax,
you know,
bill.
That's the most popular person. Right. Well, there you go.
Yeah,
I'm going to get my Claude comes a third.
You'll see my face on the tax bill. So, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, I want to ask, that was a great question. Yeah. I want to ask you another question. It may not be as great, but you know, and it's personal. How did you recognize that? I mean, as someone, I have a strong faith, but I'm not a preacher or anything like that.
Sure.
Did you just like get a call one day from, this is God talking, I need you to serve?
Yeah.
I mean, or was this something that all along in your life you said, you know, my life should be something bigger than this?
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? Was it like a process, or did you wake up one day and a message came to you that said, I need you to serve?
Yeah. So, I did the whole basketball coaching thing for a long time and
to youth
coached basketball at three universities.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know. Okay.
Excuse me. So head women's basketball.
Wonderful.
Coach.
Okay.
And so that was my heart's desire. It was the thing that I wanted to do. I asked God to give me a career in doing that. And God did that. And then, as you just mentioned, one day he just said, all right, I did what you asked me to do. Now I need you to do what I want you to do. And so, so just one day he said, it's time.
What an amazing state that must have been. Right. And were you like one of those, was it one of the apostles that's just like, not me, God,
no,
it can't be me. No.
I'd heard too many horror stories about people who were running away from the call. Yeah. And it's kind of like, Gibbet, it's kind of like getting a taste for food. You know, God didn't throw me in the water and said, swim, you know, he gave me lessons, you know? So I started out just working with the men and then working with the youth and then working with my students.
You're too young to be doing all this. Yeah, you must have been 11 years old when you started coaching.
No. And so, once that happened, you know, put me in the position, gave me training wheels.
Isn't that amazing?
Just took the wheels off and said, go. And that's what I did.
Well, I don't know if it's because I know you or is it because, you know, I know I've seen you a Sunday, but you know what? You just see good people sometimes, Claude, and they just have an aura of they're just good people. Right. Have you noticed that?
Yes. He's a good one. He's always been a great guy. You know, you can check his background. You won't find anything ugly out there. And I've always seen and viewed him as being something more than just being a basketball coach.
Because right.
It's in his blood. You know, I mean, there are ministers in my family. There are ministers, of course, in Ruth's family. And I think it's just in his blood, to be quite honest with you, to become a pastor, to be quite honest with you.
Well,
and to do the leadership, the things that he's doing right now. I know that he sees there is a need in the community.
Right.
And I want you to visit a little bit, if we have time, about what's going on with our communities and how our communities are being destroyed by these investors that are building these large homes in communities that is going to somewhere down the line adversely affect the tax base.
Price everyone out.
Right. It's going to price everyone out in communities of color, to be quite honest with you, if you would, just a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in the historic African-American neighborhoods, for example, my grandmother's house right next to her home that was built when?
Back in the 50s.
Built in the 50s. Right next door, there are homes starting at $400,000. And so while, you know, my dad may be okay, but their children and grandchildren are saying, how are we going to be able to pay the taxes?
They're getting gentrified out.
They're getting gentrified out. And so that is part of my platform, not only educating, but advocating, you know, being an advocate, to educate them and empower them to do what needs to be done so they can hold on to their property.
Well, we just need, in general, more affordable housing here.
Right. We do.
And if you look in the city, again, this recent administration, of course, all you got to do is look at the housing director and what he said, and I won't revisit all those things. But at the end of the day, they had to turn away government money because of incompetence. Yeah. They had to turn away money that was meant to be for modern income housing because they couldn't get their act together to build it on time.
Yeah.
And you know who got the money? The county.
Yeah.
And they're building affordable income housing in Pasadena.
Pasadena.
When it should be here in Houston.
Right.
So that's really the real problem.
That's the problem.
That is a problem. So we need, hopefully the new mayor, the new council will just get on the stick and get to work and get as much money as we can.
Sure.
And subsidize these houses because the best way to preserve a neighborhood is to keep the people there.
That's
keep
exactly
there.
Right.
And that's really the only way.
That's true.
Because they are invested.
Sure.
Their lives, their kids, when they were kids, their grandkids. I mean, they're invested. Let's take another caller real quick. We have Justice. Is there a Justice on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Justice, you got me, Gilbert Garcia, a tip from Gilbert with Pastor Cummins. And Mr. Claude Cummins, what do you got?
Hi, yes. Thank you for having me on the show. I have a question for Pastor Cummins and kind of touches on some of what you were talking about before. I feel like I'm always hearing stories and seeing articles about how racial discrimination is affecting property appraisal and unfairly elevating the property taxes of people's homes. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on about that phenomenon and what you think could be done within the tax appraisal collector's office to influence that phenomenon.
Very good, Justin. Thank you for that question.
Yeah, I don't believe that it is a discriminatory thing, Justice. I really don't. What I do believe is that because people in the historically, you know, black and brown neighborhoods are not educated about the value of their property, they are taken advantage of because of that, mm-hmm. you know, and I hope that makes sense. And so what I'm saying is, let's say, for example, I have some inherited property. It's property that my mother and my father paid for. It is theirs. They didn't have to pay taxes on their property because they were of age. But now that it has been passed down to me, that property is no longer tax exempt. I have to pay the property tax. And either because I didn't know or because I couldn't afford to do it, I didn't pay taxes. And as a result, I lost the home. Why did that happen? I think that's because of a lack of education. And that is happening in those historical black and brown neighborhoods because no one taught them about paying taxes. No one educated them about what it really takes to keep that property. And that is something that I am going to implement in that office.
Right, because the rules are the same.
The rules are the same
for everybody.
Yeah, the rules are the same for everybody.
What makes it discriminatory, in my opinion, is the education process.
Right, it's the education.
Right. Because, you know, you can have a black or white family living right next door to each other.
That's right. That's right.
Right. I mean, we've got that in some neighborhoods. But the problem is who has been educated on what needs to be done when a senior passes away.
Right.
I've had cousins that have come close to losing property because they didn't understand clearly that once our aunt passed away, that they were supposed to go down and make the necessary changes and the paperwork so they could get the tax bill. You know, instead, whenever that tax bill came in my aunt's name, they said, well, my aunt's dead. So they just threw it in the garbage.
Right.
Until one day there was a sign placed in front of the yard saying, you know, there's going to be a foreclosure sale on this property.
Yep.
And I had to, you know, come in and save it for them. So that's part of the problem. And that's why I like Pastor Cummings' idea of bringing the tax office to the community
right. So
they can be educated on what needs to take place. You know, as far as what happens with your property, you know, once a person that's 65 and has been tax exempt, they pass away and you have to assume the tax.
I don't think people know they can protest their taxes.
They don't.
I don't think they know.
Right.
And the only ones who know are the big developers.
Exactly right.
And of course, what do? They hire a bunch of lawyers to make sure they don't have to pay taxes.
Right.
But the average person just doesn't even know. Now I have, hold your thought.
Sure.
I have a protest in my property for many years. And I used to do all this work, you know, get comps and, you know, meaning comparables, other houses that look like mine. And I would go and I would make this whole presentation to someone and then he'd go, okay, I'm going to just take it down to 10%.
Yeah.
And then the next year I make this whole thing. Okay. I'll just take it down 10%. I'm like, wait a minute. I could have said nothing and you would have just taken it down to 10%. And then if you want to go more than that, you got to take it to the board and all this hullabaloo. And by the way, I had to wait like a whole day.
Yeah.
So now I use O'Connor and I'm not here to sell them or anything, but now they go do it because they're there all day and then they know better the ins and outs. But what about everyday people? They don't know.
And they're
afraid to reach out to O'Connor. Right.
And that's what I was going to ask you if you didn't mind me asking.
Sure.
How much does that service cost you?
Zero.
It costs $0. Most people don't know that.
Yeah. Right. I'll say it again.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah.
What it means is if they can save me money, we split it.
Right.
And guess what? That's the best darn splitting I've ever had.
Right.
And if they don't save me any money, it's nothing.
It's nothing. And most people don't know that.
Yep.
And so even take it a step forward, what I have even already started out to do is reach out to nonprofits who will help people protest their
taxes. That's a great idea.
Will educate them. I've reached out to civil court judges who really get the bad rap because most time people go into the civil court judges' courtroom, it's because you've already lost your property.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have made conversations with them about, hey, would you like to do some pro bono work? To work with people to prevent them from having to come into your court in the first place. And of course they say yes, because they don't want to have to be the ones to make a final judgment on whether someone gets to lose their property or not. And so putting more things in place to help people save their properties. You mentioned affordable housing. The homes that are there now are affordable. The ones that are not affordable are the three.
Oh, the new ones.
Oh, the new ones that are being built. Right.
That they're building.
It's unbelievable. Well, you know, let's face it, though. I know we kind of glossed over it. You know, there was rampant redlining by banks. And what does that mean? I'm just going to put a line around this area and we're not going to lend any money there, or we're not going to put a bank there. And that was gone on for years. Well, that may be sort of a little bit different, but yet there's still a lot of that same mentality. One big bank, I remember, got in trouble because they had a lot of people pretending to be interviewing people of color.
Sure.
And it was all a charade.
Right.
And then another one, I remember the CEO came to town and I was one that was able to be with him, and this big proclamation of he's going to give, I forgot if it was 30 or 60 billion, but it was just a big number into the community. And of course we thought that meant he's going to like do grants or things in the community. You know what he meant? They're going to lend money there. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. Right. It's right. Like, what do you mean you're going to now? It's not, I mean, I just thought about that for a minute. Does that mean that before your epiphany, you weren't going to lend money to the people of color?
Right.
Because now that's really what you meant. You'll be willing to lend. Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
That's why you get the subsidy. Remember, all these guys are subsidized by being FDIC insured. You know, they pay their fee, but all these things, and they're too big to fail. Who bailed them out? We did.
Right.
So that it's one of those things where if you're going to enjoy sort of these things from the taxpayers, you need to be more responsive to the community and our elected officials of what's right.
Sure.
Boy, so don't get me gone.
Yeah, let me ask you this. So I know there are going to be some that are going to say, you've never run for office before. You know, you're not a politician. I mean, what do you say to them?
Yeah. And I'm proud to say that I'm not a politician. I really am. You know, especially when you look at the state of politics right now, it's just my personal opinion. The politicians are getting richer. The people are getting poorer. Mm-hmm. That's just my personal opinion. And so I am running because there is a problem and there is a need. And the problem is getting larger and the needs are getting greater.
Right.
I like to tell people the tax assessor's office collected $2.1 billion in taxes last year. $2.1 billion. The collecting is working well. What's not working is the fact that people are losing their homes. What's not working is that there is no affordable housing coming in if people lose their homes. That is generational wealth. It should be passed down from generation to generation to generation. And I want that office to do that, to help people stay in their homes.
I think in many ways, Claude, because I had never run before, it depends on the person. But in general, someone like you, Pastor, with all your experiences, it's an advantage that you haven't really run before, because what does that mean? You're not in the bubble.
Right.
It's so easy when you've been in office 50 years, 30, to be in the bubble.
Right.
And you lose sight of what the people and their real needs, and you're just in this bubble.
Sure.
Well, you don't have a bubble, which means you can look at problems and solve them with a real fresh perspective.
Right.
I think it's a good thing. We have another caller. Who do we got there? Isidro. Is Isidro there?
Yes, my dear friend.
Isidro Garza, how are you?
I am doing fantabulous. And that gentleman that's there with you, he's magnificent.
Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. You got Claude Sr. And Claude the pastor.
Yes.
Well,
yes, I know both, and they're good people.
Thank you.
Well, Isidro, thank you. And what's been going on with you? And what's the latest with people coming in? And I know that there's just families that are just need help. And, you know, we've been trying to help. You and I have, and Lulac and Johnny and others. What's happening with all that?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll answer that. Well, let me answer that first. There's soul searching. Who are we as human beings, and what is our purpose? the vast majority, 99.9% of the people that are coming over are leaving areas where they're being persecuted.
Right.
And the asylum laws are really not not fair. Out of every one person, every 10 persons that cross, 9 get rejected. Even though they come from, because I know some, Gilbert, one of the mayor, one of the persons that you help, one of the family, he's got 2 bullet holes in his leg. What more proof? But there's a good chance that he's going to get, when his hearing comes up, that he's going to be sent back to this country. So, so the question is, a lot of it is political, and I don't just want to blame one person, but it's a system that's been going on and is festering. And in my opinion, my humble opinion, it's evil outdoing the good, and we need to put a stop to it. And if we don't, God will. Eventually, yeah. I mean, the Bible's full of those stories. So what we need to do is we need to treat those people with dignity. They are human beings, little kids, like the ones that you saw at that went to meet you, Mayor. You saw 3 kids. Well, there was another little girl, another 9-year older, and their parents. That's who's coming across.
Yeah.
And who would turn their back and make them go through razor wire and make it a political deal to where 25% of all the governors are coming down to put a stop to this invasion?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. But here's part of the problem. We don't talk about what's going on in these other countries enough. So yep. There are many who think they're just coming over here to take riches and stuff from us, but we don't talk about it. I met with Ambassador Tai in Washington, D.C. just a couple of weeks ago. I met with her to talk to her about the need for there to be change in the way the Philippines is handling just organizers. We had an organizer that CWA funded, Alex De La Rosa, that was killed last year just for trying to organize a union. In the Philippines, there are organizers that are being red tagged over there. You know what red tag means? Mm-hmm. I know it means that they've got a target on their back. And if they're out trying to organize workers, they could very well get killed. But do you hear anything about that on the news outlets that we have in this country? No, we don't. So there are many in this country that don't understand the atrocities that those in other countries are having to deal with on a daily basis. That's the problem. That's why those poor people are trying to get into this country, where they're trying to save their lives. They're trying to save the lives of their families. This stuff is real, what's happening in these other countries. That's why they're leaving like they are. But we don't talk about it. The news media doesn't really paint the picture of how in factories overseas, you have children and parents that are sleeping on floors in factories. And if they leave, they have a possibility of getting killed. That kind of stuff is real. It's happening in these other countries. That's why they're trying to get in here to save their lives and save their families. It's true. Take it from someone now who's in Washington, D.C., that's talking to ambassadors, that's talking to secretaries, that's talking to the vice president of this country about the atrocities that are taking place in other countries. That's why we have the issue at the border. Folks are trying to save their lives and save the lives of their children.
And you know what? We would be doing the same darn thing too. Right thing. We would. It's either, go ahead.
Okay. So thank you, Pastor. And let me just add to that. The people that have been killed are right here in our own fields. That are killed because they're trying to unionize and trying to get respectable living wage, water in the fields, restrooms, just the basic sanitary requirements of a human being that's being treated with dignity.
Right.
We don't have to. Absolutely, the Philippines is a good place to go to, but also here within our own Texas. There's a lot of meetings. I just finished coming from one, and I won't say which one, but I was the only Hispanic in the conversation with about 20 Anglos. And they don't understand what, you know, when I raise an issue like this, I'm the oddball. So that battle is still going on. And all I'm speaking to is to their hearts and their souls. I'm not talking about Mexicans or Colombians or Venezuelans. I'm talking about a little girl, 9 years old. What are we going to do with her? She's here asking for help. What do we do as a country?
Yeah, well, the first thing we need to do is we need to make sure we vote.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, if I could, just before we close out, I met with Lita Schumer a couple of weeks ago. I've met with other organizations that have asked CWA, now that I'm the president, we spend millions of dollars on campaigns across this country. I've made Senator Schumer understand clearly. I've made other organizations that we have in the past given money to, that there will be no money moved from CWA if there is not a component to get out the vote in black and brown communities. Simple as that. They either do it or I'm going to do it, keep the money and do it myself across the country and take it from union who normally spends about $20 million annually, you know, on elections in presidential cycles, I should say, and understand clearly that it's, and I'm not only saying that to those leaders, I'm also saying it to labor union presidents, because, you know, there are only four labor union presidents that look like me in this country, and I'm one of them. And I've been in the room with those others. When I mention money being spent on black and brown turnout, I get that deer in the headlight look, too.
Yeah.
But what I say to them is this: if you all don't help me with it, I'm going to do it by myself. But we're going to make sure that brown and black people in this country, and not just in Texas, but in every state where we're spending money, especially in the blue states where we need to have the college, call it the electoral college, in order to win, we're spending money to make sure we get black and brown communities out. And we're not going to wait until September and October to do it. We're going to start earlier than that.
Well,
very good.
I just, Cito, stay with us. I just want to make sure everybody knows that I'm going to be having a whole episode on Metro, because that is just a way to once again take away resources for a well-run agency that is serving people of color. And so we got to just call it what it is. Is it perfect? Of course not. But at the end of the day, it's probably one of the best run organizations in the state. And so I'm going to talk all about it for my colleague that had asked, I think it was Bob, a question about the university line and all those things.
And it's a service that's needed.
Oh, yeah.
It's needed.
In fact, we need more, not less. And the funny thing is, there's a whole industry, like our favorite blogger and these people, that all they do is want to tear down Metro.
Right.
And they want to foster sprawl in this region rather than helping the inner city.
Yeah.
So we're going to be, you know, talking all
change.
About that.
Yeah. We can't make change in this country. We can't make change in this state if we don't vote. We have to get out and vote. We have to register people in our communities, and we have to get them out to vote. I could go on and on and on about how a 45 got elected Trump some years ago. But it'll happen again, to be honest, if we don't get out and vote. We need y'all to vote for Clark Cummings. I know we just have to shut down.
Yeah, everybody, I want everyone to know this is my man. He's my pastor.
Thank you.
And he should be all of ours, pastor. And all, I mean, we need someone like him. And he's going to go into the office with a humane approach to help people.
Yes.
It's not about taking money away from the county. No. It's about giving the resource to everyone to take advantage of things that are there for everyone to take advantage of, like protesting your taxes.
Yes.
He's going to find a way to be more efficient. This is my guy. He's great. And I'm going to have him back.
Thank you, Gilbert.
I'm going to get, well, Isidro, did you have anything else? You got about 10 seconds.
No, God bless all of you.
And God bless
you. God bless you, Cesar.
Come back. And we're going to have a lot more to say about Greyhound. And so, Pastor, I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds.
Claude Cummings III, Harris County Tax Assessor Collector. I am number 3 on the ballot. Early voting, February the 20th. Super Tuesday, March the 5th. As you listen to other people, if they don't have a plan, don't vote for them. Facts don't help things get better. Plans do. I have a plan for the office, and that office is to empower people through education and advocacy. Claude Cummings III, Harris County Tax Assessor Collector. I'm number three on the ballot. Thank you.
Amen. And I saw coming into my elevator, it's Black History Month, and there was a woman who was the first African-American to get a pilot's license back in like the 20s. And you know what her quote was? I refuse to say no. There you go. It's okay to say no. I'm Gilbert Garcia, right. Tip from Thank Gilbert. You. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Thank you.
This is Thank Gilbert you. Andrew Garcia. Listen to my radio show, A Tip from Gilbert. Talk, inspiration, and prayer every Monday from 11 a.m. till noon on Houston's gospel leader, KWWJ. 1360 AM and streaming live on KWWJ.org. Listen on the legendary KYOK 1140 AM and streaming live on KYOKRadio.org. KCOH 1230 AM, The Source. On Send Geek Radio 95.1 FM 1460 AM. And Aliento Radio 101.7 FM and 1540 AM. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then.